Before we get started with Business Second Opinion today, I want to thank our great sponsor, Rebel. You may know their great products, but did you know that they're working together to co-create a future without human trafficking? Rebel donates 2.5% of all net sales to Not For Sale to support regions of the world that are vulnerable to exploitation and human trafficking. Through impact sourcing, they help communities to thrive and prevent their vulnerability to trafficking in the first place. Their rallying cry is, "We are Rebel." It really fits with this cause. The 2.5% donation shows them as truly a band of revolutionaries for the greater good. We're so proud to be associated with them and to help tell their story. Please enjoy their great products and thereby support a cause we all believe in. Check out www.rebl.co, www.rebel.co to find purchase locations. Welcome to Business Second Opinion. This is the podcast that digs deep to answer questions about business and business practice you may not know you need to be asking. We believe you should be asking for your benefit and your understanding of your business ethics and practice. In the process of answering them, we give you a second opinion, usually a contrarian opinion, but that's well-tested and proven to give in the outcomes you really want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our positive in-house contrarian. Here we, as usual, respond to big and hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So, Carol, last episode we talked about innovation from the standpoint of a living systems view. We pulled apart a few different HBR articles on innovation to show the worldview they came from and then offered a different perspective with some ideas about how to start working on innovation from this living systems view. We also touched a bit on paradigms and how the authors fundamentally missed a capability, which is really about overcoming mechanicalness to move from pattern following to pattern generation. And last time you promised to come back this time with adding some more practices to build a mind that can innovate, including why you would really want to measure success only from the point of your customers and other stakeholders. So from that end, where do we start?
Wow. I did promise all of that. And it is, of course, a favorite subject for me, innovation. Today, I want us to do a little taking the idea of capability for innovation and put it more forefront versus this list of behaviors that are often listed in articles like in Harvard Business Review, and particularly focus on one process in innovation, which is the process of creativity. So we'll take all of that another step and move it into talking about it as a systems thinking capability, like a regenerative view. We've talked about that a lot. And we'll explore another era that goes beyond the behavioral patterning, you know, which was literally like 100 years ago where that came into existence. And I'm going to call this the regenerative approach to innovation. It's really about how you get to pattern generation rather than just the pattern following we talked about. Particularly, how do we spark creativity in a way that leads to innovation? In fact, I'm going to suggest we might even, in spite of articles said that we couldn't do this, create something called innovation on demand.
Wow. Okay. So we always use Harvard Business Review for these articles, at least one or two, to examine and show a contrast here. So I think that's where we're going to start today. So this episode, we're giving a contrarian view to creativity as an isolated or group process. So for your reference, if you are following along, you should check out Why Seclusion is the Enemy of Creativity by Elliot Pepper from the September 2010 HBR, and How to Nourish Your Team's Creativity by Ron Carucci from the May 2017 HBR. So for a little synopsis, here's a couple of the key messages, particularly from Nourish Your Team's Creativity, that we want to question and move to a new understanding around. So first, leaders need to create a culture, space, time, and guardrails for teams to engage in creativity. Second, they need to balance art and commerce. And third, they need to create emotional, safe spaces for people to challenge towards great ideas. So we talked about the misguided idea of emotional and psychological safety and safe spaces in episode number 103. So if you want to learn more, you should definitely check out that episode. The idea here is that we're trying to tease out that gets touched on in both articles is that it's not helpful to bolt onto pre-existing work processes to accommodate to problems that other structures and processes have caused. It's really, at the end of the day, a lack of capability that can be developed in people, accelerating their ableness to work on hard, complex, and challenging ideas in mixed level groups. What's needed instead is an elevated capability to be self-reflective and to manage one's own reactivity and ego, plus a radically different work design for how you manage people and endeavors. So let's not go over that again, Carol.
Well, I do encourage people to go listen to that episode 103. And the reason is that recently we had a Microsoft group that's part of one of our programs we run that had said this was starting to be a really big deal in their organization and that they were trying to think about how to deal with safe spaces. So we sent one of the guys from Microsoft to listen to number 103 episode, and he said it changed how he thought about it when he went back to work, so that he knew it was about giving him capability to deal with the complexity and the tough interactions and engagements they needed to do, not figure out how to accommodate and make it safe around them.
So the other two ideas posed here also seem to be additional examples of trying to accommodate something that actually fundamentally needs redesigning. What we're suggesting here is that you start in a different place. Why is it that we are always just tinkering or amending and not questioning the foundational idea that might be causing the problem? And maybe that's a better place to start. I even see myself doing this with my business when I was consulting. I still catch myself, you know, trying to give employees and our contractors incentives after years of being in the work with you, Carol. But I always have to remind myself of how much I need to see past bad work design and a lack of capability. That would always be a better place to start for all the people involved, including myself, to be able to build that capability in me. Even if you look at the idea of bosses or hierarchical leaders as a solution, that in and of itself is an accommodation, if you think about it, rather than starting from a place that takes into account how humans actually naturally organize. Like Carucci's recommendation that leaders need to create guardrails for teams on what and how to work when pursuing creativity. So this has got me thinking, is there a bad work design and capability void here? Carol, how do you read into that advice?
Well, I really agree that it is a void, because every time I see one of these articles saying, okay, you're saying this way of working, this way of doing innovation, this way of ideating is not working, so let's add this thing to it. Let's augment brainstorming. Let's augment team development. So there are several examples of this kind of accommodation strategy that are often used with new programs and processes. And one of them is recommended in that article on how you nourish teams. Examples of where they could be and should be if they went back to starting the foundation and redesign is what we want to really work with. So let me start with a concept that is missing from all the approaches in both of these articles.
So where do we go back to in that case, though? And let's remember to bring it back to creativity and innovation, our theme for this month. What's actually foundational to innovation and creativity from a living systems view?
Well, we get stuck in a view. I'm going to suggest there are three things we have to hold in mind. And for the most part, both of these articles and the ones we had last time are all stuck in one of these three. It's called actualizing. Yeah, and you get a picture of that, actualizing, bringing, making stuff happen, getting things to happen. There's a story I might tell you about a team that discovered this is how they were stuck when they were trying to bring about creativity and innovation. I was in DuPont, and you know, a lot of people used to tell me I shouldn't work with DuPont because they did such horrible things. I said, well, I guess we should just let them keep doing that. But I had one amazing leader who eventually became chairman, CEO, and president of DuPont, who at that point had the safety group under his authority. And I asked that group a question, what drives you? You know, what keeps you up at night? And their answer was always, well, we want the safest manufacturing plants in the world. And they were thinking about what they wanted to actualize. They were thinking about what they were trying to make happen, how they would measure that. And these were all actualizing thoughts. Again, the idea of do something and the sense of that was what they really wanted, to actualize into existence things that they felt like would make it safer as a result of their work.
So as I'm thinking about this, it sounds like they are thinking about how to organize and order their work around this idea of safe facilities and how to improve their existing ones and build new ones that are even safer. This is what they think and act on. This is kind of all of what's swirling in their head all the time. Do I have that right?
Yeah. And there's a key thing you mentioned there, which is they work with an existing view from what's in existence and try and augment, evolve, and ameliorate the problems within it. And many people are thinking at the moment, well, doesn't that cover it all? I mean, I believe, you know, that's what we're all trying to do. But I believe if you really want to do innovation on demand, and even innovation at all, that there are two more processes that you have to think about in the totality, and they're not included here, but they do affect why most businesses don't innovate or really awaken creativity in any meaningful way for their buyers, for their users, and then for those people who try and serve them. So what are those other two processes? So we mentioned actualizing, get stuff done. But the two other ideas are realizing and potentializing. Now I could pause for a moment, and I bet you nothing appears in your mind when I say those. And it's a good way to understand why we don't even have organizational thinking practices that are about realizing and actualizing. So let me define what those mean. So again, actualizing all is about what already exists and how we can improve on it. But that's not really innovation completely, maybe a little creativity in how to improve. Realizing comes from literally a different plane of thinking. You have to step outside of the current existing, not what is there right now, but what David Bohm calls supra implicate. It's like it's implied, it doesn't exist yet, and it's way above and beyond. And it's like drawing on things that you can't yet see. So we go from the actualizing of taking existence and getting more out of it versus bringing something into existence that doesn't currently exist, but would give us greater potential. So when I probed all this with the DuPont safety team, they all realized that they were actually holding the existing facilities in their mind, even new ones that were under construction, and how the people were running them from a view of getting them safer as a facility and how they were used to making that happen. They said they noticed they were defining this in two ways. One was that if they were in this actualizing mode, they always saw problems and what they should work on. And the second thing is they noticed they were always trying to improve on defined existing procedures. So there's a good clue.
So I think if I'm following you correctly, I think what you're saying here is one of the clues I can watch for when I look at something and try to improve it is that I have to accommodate to the current design. This inherently leads to a more limited set of outcomes because we're starting from what we already know and what we already see. So if I'm following you, this is actualizing work. And I assume the folks at DuPont were not getting very far in this conversation. Am I right?
Oh, that's right. Everything they did was this accommodating around, through, and over all the shortfalls and problems and trying to, quote, innovate based on starting with existence.
So it leads me to an obvious question here. Where else can we start? Is it blue sky thinking? I'm assuming it's not brainstorming. I think we've done a podcast on why brainstorming doesn't work. And I think it's because we storm around improving what we already know and see. And the idea is that I come up with something out of thin air. That idea rarely produces innovation at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. Realizing is about reordering of a whole phenomena. The current one won't get us there, and it must be reordered at a different level of system. So how do you do that? You envision, this is work of the mind. It's literally putting a different mind to work, because remember, it's not in existence. So you envision a better quality energy outcome for people who are counting on you. This is really important. Not internal for the most part, but buyers, customers. Although you do want to look for the co-creators as a collective, the communities you work in, Earth. You have to take the mind outside to get to realizing, and then you work on higher energy outcomes themselves and what nature of energies need to be related to that from getting outside the system. So when the DuPont safety team took this on, they began to envision the process of making chemicals. And we were working a lot with the intermediate chemicals at that point. And we would envision what that process looked like for end to end, from earth to earth, from rail cars arriving with chemicals at the sourcing facility to the distribution of finished materials and the finishing process that was used downstream. So this led us to be able to actually see what the TiO2 business in this particular intermediate chemicals was doing, and all the way through from the mining process, the converters, the commercial products, even those that ended up in the home, and including down the drain and into the streams. So they imaged, not made up, not brainstormed. They looked at how it was working as a system of a whole, not what was wrong with it, but what the flow looked like. And what was the core process that it took to not only be safe, but innovative? This process of beginning to be able to see how it was that it could be working if it were accomplishing what it wanted for that whole system led to a set of managing principles and innovative products like safer and more effective TiO2, which is what makes opacity in paint and Oreo cookies and things like that, but also in the mining process. They had been working on safer ways to use their current technology and their safer existing products, but by starting and envisioning the entire process as it works from earth to earth, they create a fundamentally different set of proprietary products and processes that also, not uncorrelatedly, had much higher margins. They had to really work to move what had been limiting them, which was their actualizing mindset of looking what was currently in existence and how you evolve it, and come to something new, which could be realized through this mining process that was healthy for Earth, for coworkers, for the community that they were all mining adjacent to and in their lives. Many would think probably, well, you just ought to stop mining titanium. Well, I guess someday we may figure out how to do that. But right now, the important thing was to figure out how to do it safely, because there are only other alternatives to it, which people turn to and do in other countries, are very toxic versions in order to get this opacity, because it helps produce privacy and protection. And we all use these kind of products. So it's a challenge. And I hope someday, as I said, there will be an innovative process that's not related to mining and maybe not even titanium, but makes it safer.
So I know you told a story before about how this led to developing a principle that the DuPont board of directors adopted, which read, DuPont will not sell or develop products we cannot see as producing healthy outcomes from earth to earth. And they set up a safety program eventually too, if I'm right, to sell this safety process to others with the same ideas in mind. And then soon afterwards, the board approved being founding members of the UN Global Compact, requiring extreme transparency as a key to joining. It's not even close enough, but it definitely changed the conversation.
Well, it's hugely important, because we had all been trying to manage by policy and law and regulation what people were doing. And the idea that came from this, which was very innovative, it was Chad Holliday's idea, was to give people an opportunity to join from around the world, all these big folks. And all you had to do was you had to be transparent. You had to show people what you were doing. And if you didn't stick with the transparency in reports that you were writing, answering a certain set of questions, then you would be removed from the UN Global Compact. And this was at a time that we were beginning, right after the turn of the century, really people wanting to be showing they were doing something. I agree, part of it was greenwashing, but it was a very important process that moved us forward.
So, Cal, you mentioned a third leg on this stool in order to get innovation, meaning elevating the life of stakeholders like customers. So was that potentializing? Before you answer, if I can wrestle with this a little bit. So realizing gets us to seeing greater systemic outcomes that required a complete rethinking, and not from blue sky thinking, but actually imaging the system working, as you talked about in the DuPont story, in a more whole and complete way, or in its most whole and complete way, really. So then we can do design and creation of the new pathways to get there and actualize it. Is potentializing about raising the capacity and capability of people and the systems?
You got it. In this story about DuPont, it particularly focused on getting to the idea that to really have innovation and to do this imaging of the working at a higher level for the whole system, you had to go way beyond training. You had to go beyond actualizing. You had to avoid putting procedures and standardizing everything and everyone, and you had to make capability building a ritual in the organization. That meant that you really had to build more capacity with strategy, with research and development, sales, marketing processes, and at multiple levels. So to get to the level of realizing we just looked at, this idea that we could create whole new healthier systems. We installed, is that the right word? We built developmental infrastructure. And it was about building systemic thinking capability, this ability to get outside of the system and look at the system working as a whole. And to do that as a part of the working of life itself, and to be able to generate new work system that required people to make promises to specific customer and stakeholders. But for today, let's just look at the infrastructure we built, because this is what's foundational. Innovation is never mentioned. It's always a list of to-dos, you know, actualizing things, and then the hoping there are few people who can do the realizing, the getting something great that doesn't exist yet. But you have to have this developmental infrastructure, not bosses creating an environment where people could feel good about things, because just feeling like everybody ideas are open, everybody can be involved, doesn't really necessarily create development. And so embedding a developmental infrastructure where people attend sessions regularly, and by that I mean monthly, not to just actualize, because they did work on getting stuff done. We always worked on real things, but to improve their thinking capacity, their systems thinking capacity, using their real work, not hypothetical work, no lemonade stands, their real work. And this happened about 9 to 12 days a year, depending on which part of DuPont you were in or which company you're in where we do this. It's always happens, the developmental infrastructure, this recurring pattern, it's worked with natural work teams, all of whom are being educated on how to experience their mind working, getting over their mechanicalness and getting into creativity. And then they are not so limited and they can open up this creative capacity and they gain deep understanding and the ability to manage their own mental process, but only if you get this ritual of development through a developmental infrastructure.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm connecting this to the regenerative business now, which people should check out for more detail on how to redesign work systems. If I remember correctly, it's not about training our functional skills tied to development of competencies or skills, but to manage thinking personally and collectively. It's really about managing our state of being to bring in what's needed and understanding and managing one's own motivation and what that's directed towards. So it's about making everyone capable so we can understand and engage with one another, thereby to be more self-determining. So it includes gaining ableness to direct our motivation towards contributions to a better life for all stakeholders, consistent with the strategy of the business and its markets and production processes. And it supports people being able to rid themselves of all the accommodations built up over years and years, designed to manage people, but that are really not needed any longer. It actually makes innovation and creativity on demand, as you say. So as I reflect on this, ultimately, this is a pretty big mind shift and one that comes from managing people outside of others to enabling people to manage themselves internally and support on a shared set of aims. So the innovation is directed towards, as you say, life-giving changes for customers, Earth, communities, co-creators, and those who have invested in the business. The move was from innovating with internal processes that awaken personal motivation and inspiration for making a difference, if I'm tracking this correctly.
Yeah. And in fact, the good news is you really get something for going through this. In the case of the DuPont safety team, they were averaging over 100 innovation a year in the various teams that they worked on doing this with after the realization idea came into existence. And they were now in this ongoing development process. But I want to remind people that in each case, they picked a specific market beneficiary and a local stakeholder, like a river or a valley, and they immediately put a few approaches into motion and move the needle very quickly in a way they could patent something. They changed their position in the market all because they did something for someone beyond DuPont. They are the ones who actually named this innovation on demand, and they could actually do that.
So what did they actually do to create that on-demand realization?
Well, let me go a little deeper into this developmental infrastructure, because this potentializing process they credit with having made the difference. And it's why Chad Holliday wrote the foreword to my first book, The Responsible Business. They had these developmental sessions, which again, were working on real work. These were not training sessions. They were bring your real work in, but we are going to disrupt and you're going to learn a new way to think about this, a new way to have your mind go to work, a new way to work on yourself and watch how you get mechanical and have all these cognitive biases. And then you're also expected to apply that to the new thing. And what we worked on giving them was always a new framework to destabilize their thinking. So the biggest problem that we have in trying to be pattern generators is we tend to have a lazy mind that wants to do pattern following. So you have to have a process, which we call framework thinking, and is a living systems way of thinking that destabilizes and requires you to examine something in a new way before you can go forward, and the team to do it together. One way of describing what a framework is, you've heard us talk here about these geometric processes where you may have nested systems, three lines of work, an individual nested in a family, nested in a nation or a community. And that is visually, when you draw that, that's a geometric way of organizing thinking that causes you to see it as a system and watch it working rather than to make a list of things that you could do. It's really very different than procedures because the framework invites you to form questions, whereas most of the things we're given in innovation tell us what to do. But frameworks don't give you the answers. They give you, all right, form a question here. But they also demand reflection on how we're thinking and our relationship to the opportunities in front of it to be able to watch ourselves while we work in a way on some real life work we're going to do. It's not a problem view, but a realizing view about the whole of something.
So what do you mean when you say that? Such as what?
Oh, okay. Well, let me ask you. There is a simple framework which works over and over, but gives new answers every time applied to things that change. So I just gave you the quick example of three lines of work, but let me explain why that matters. If you think about you inside a family, inside of a community, or if you say your team inside of a business unit, inside of a company, or what would be better would be a market, then you are getting a nested systems view. With DuPont, they learned to envision these concentric rings with the design team on the inside responsible for the development of themselves and these innovative ideas which were on the outside. For example, one client that we worked with was Benjamin Moore Paints. Now, this was at a time they were really exploring their strategic direction was Benjamin Moore was to move toward lower VOC paints, less emissions and fumes. And this was a challenge to still include the coverage that was expected when you put paint on a wall. And they wanted to have the right kind of sheen or more eggshell or flatness. And they were having a lot of trouble doing that and maintaining the low VOC. So the production process was placed inside of this framework, three lines of work. The outer ring was simultaneously, so what they said they were really seeking to pursue, this kind of at a realizing level, was complete coverage with the lowest industry release of volatiles that technologically could be done at this point. A second DuPont team was brought in the middle ring, those who were a part of the community that was going to create it together. And they were made up of R&D, the DeLisle TiO2 production team, and some members of the Benjamin Moore chemistry team and the production people who were in Benjamin Moore. The key was getting the people who needed to innovate on DuPont's side connected with people who were aspiring to a new brand in their line. So notice here, I've got a real client in a real situation with a real realizing aim, which no one knows how to achieve when they start. So the DeLisle DuPont line operators said over and over again, they were so excited about this opportunity to make this ecological leap. And I remembered in my ear people saying, but DuPont doesn't care about ecology. And I'm watching these line operators who are working with a company who does, and they get to innovate. And they were excited because they got to have these practical outcomes. So this was a choice of project that we put into the developmental infrastructure series of sessions. So you find a client who aspires to something, and we become their R&D team. DuPont became their R&D team. That's where innovation mindset comes in. That team began to move this framework also out into the system way beyond Benjamin Moore. So let me just summarize here. Innovation on demand is what we're after, right? What you need is the aspiration of a customer or the evolution of a system, plus a systemic framework, plus the right team members who cross over the entire system and who are committed to this entire project, and you have them in an ongoing ritual of a developmental infrastructure that's been built that disrupts continuously how they normally think, and you don't have any procedures for it, but you have this field of energy that gets built to innovate. Zach, why don't you think about an opportunity you have, and let's just see if this kind of process would work for you. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, I'm actually thinking about when I worked previously in healthcare and the real push that the hospital I worked at had around trying to care for seniors differently and more effectively.
Right. And that would be in a kind of actualizing way. But if what we said is, what is really the restraint or the challenge that they're after, rather than looking at it demographically, why is it that you have problems with them? Or what does that problem look like?
Yeah, more often than not, folks who are at that stage of life use the emergency room reactively. And there's a lot of kind of family and caregiver burnout surrounding people at this time. So there's a lot of fear of, you know, when should I go to the doctor? What's going on with me? Am I okay? Those things that are totally...
Why are they afraid? Why do they not want to go to the doctor?
I think they're afraid of dying. Frankly, I think they're also afraid of going to the hospital. The hospital is a scary place.
But it isn't only old people. They're afraid
it's
to
everybody.
Go to the hospital. Right, right. And, you know, so I look at my experience and a lot of it has to do with, I feel like a cog in a wheel.
Yeah.
Or a rat on a maze. And I feel like nobody's going to see me when I go there. Is that part of what you saw also?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of algorithms, like people speak and use the term algorithm quite often to figure out how to allocate people. And most often doctors find themselves barely having time to see patients. And so there's a lot of kind of stamping, right? Almost this industrial kind of like, hey, are you not super sick? Okay, I'm going to put you over here. Hey, you're medium sick. Okay, I'm going to put you over here. And it's less about the person and more about the problem.
So they probably have the idea once in a while, maybe regularly, that they would like to deal with people in a more customized, individual way. What do you see as preventing that?
There's a lot of cross purposes and a lot of fragmentation in healthcare. In general, I think there's a lot of kind of, it's a real... The system is set up in a certain kind of way, and it feels like there's a lot of different opinions and ideas about how to reorient the system, and not everyone is on the same page about that.
All right. So if I were to just speculate on what a realizing idea would be that would reconcile this, and I'm not saying that the hospital or the one you are talking about right now or any other would know how to do this, but in order to overcome this fragmentation and people not wanting to show up because they feel like they're being stamped, is you're really wanting an integrated system that has a bespoke, that it's the ultimate customizable, one for one, of people who show up. That would be, if somebody could innovate and create that, that would be phenomenal.
Absolutely. I think so. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So we've got an idea about where we need to innovate, just from even thinking for a moment about what is it that's really going on. And we didn't go look at what's in existence in the hospital right now in the healthcare system. We looked at where it is that people are aspiring to something else and they stay away because they can't get it. Let's look for a moment at potentializing. Why aren't they doing that right now? Why don't they have an integrated system that's completely bespoke for every individual member?
You know, it's funny as I'm now reflecting on why that is. It's a lot of amelioration that happens. There are problems that are caused by something that's happened in the emergency department or from another health authority or from the Ministry of Health. And so they patch over some kind of problem, but that leads to other problems elsewhere. And so you have this patchwork of solutions that don't actually ever reference the initial problem to begin with. It's not foundational.
All right. So what we would need is a capability processing. Let's assuming we would build this developmental infrastructure. And one of the drives of work we'd be putting into it with a team who came to work, probably with some people who are patients, probably with some people who are healthcare providers, maybe even health administrators. And their work would be to sit and look at how do you think systemically? So it's the same like in DuPont. If you can't think systemically, you think fragmentedly. You'd be building that capability. And while they were working on it, their work simultaneously, this realizing, potentializing, moving toward actualizing would be an integrated care system that could be bespoke designed for each person who showed up. Wow. What would it take? Just your first thoughts off the top of your head to build that kind of will, that kind of thinking capability to even design for that kind of innovative idea.
One of the things I know for sure is that the will is there, but it's more about organizing and ordering how people approach that in a more cohesive and, as you say, integrated way. It's really about ensuring that those key people, the nodal people who are delivering that care, are in the room and able to have those conversations in a consistent and ritualized way.
That's great. So I can see the minute we put not just creating a healthcare system that delivers to seniors and other people who'd like to be healthy, when we went to a realizing perspective, it shifted it. And I now know what I would work on in the developmental infrastructure event. So thanks for that connection.
Yeah, thank you. It's funny because I see the actualization, you know, the aspiration of the specific customer and the realization aspect, which is really just a way to think about that opens the door to a living view of real people, and the potentializing, where the teams are in an ongoing developmental infrastructure, including reflection on themselves as they learn and how they work.
Yeah. And every team who is in that system would have a similar story to what we just did. I mean, when I look at back again at DuPont, we have done the same thing in over 100 companies. DuPont's one story. It's creativity driven, but believe it or not, it's also revenue driven, because in every one of these over 100 companies using this, they had a minimum of a 35% growth in revenue over the next few years. It varied a bit. And they made no trade-offs whatsoever in balancing between art and commerce. In fact, those were seen as nested because you got the commerce and you got the creativity. So these seemingly incompatible processes that they talk about in the article, art and commerce, became the same thing inside of a systems framework. And that's what it's all about. When real people go to work with real clients and they invest their time in developing systems thinking capacity.
Don't forget to call and tell us about your organization and business practices. 650-265-1193 or 6502-HUMAN. What worldview do you see yourself continuing to fall into? What aspirations do you have to think and work differently? Or leave us a question to speak about on an upcoming podcast. Let us know what you think of the show and its focus and content. And thanks as always to NUMMI Team, one of the courageous ones that continues to question and examine themselves and their ways of working. Carol, what do you think about NUMMI?
I love NUMMI T. I love the people who are there. And of course, they're in one of our regenerative developmental business sessions. And it's fun watching people that have for a long time done really great things be willing to step into this developmental infrastructure that destabilizes them and invites them to continue to innovate in a world that desperately needs it.
Also, don't forget that Carol's posted a paper on paradigms and the paradigms we use quite regularly on the show at the regenerativeparadigminstitute.com webpage. This has been Business Second Opinion.